How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 141 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network and on iTunes. Search Locked On Thunder. You can subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review once you're on that page also, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Wednesday episode now. Got a guest today from a second-time guest now from Down to Dunk, from Daily Thunder, Andrew Schleck. What's happening, man?
Oh, not much. Just living the dad life, getting my kids to sleep, ready to talk about Thunder.
Living the dad life. That sounds... So you have Legos in your life now?
So many Legos. Yes. Today, we went to the Lego store tonight and we built a Lego raccoon.
Lego raccoon.
Yes. It was very cool. I also discovered there are Lego babies.
That's like you build babies out of Legos, not like Legos birthing Legos, right?
This is a tiny baby Lego man. I didn't know existed.
And you know, have you seen the Lego movie?
I have. Yes.
That's a good movie.
It's great.
I think that movie.
We can talk about Legos instead of the Thunder if you want, because I can go all night. So it's up to you.
Locked on Legos. Well, the Thunder are trying to build a new second unit. How's that transition?
That's beautiful.
So the reason that I thought about having you on was because you slid right into my DMs yesterday.
I did.
And I want everyone to know it was as creepy as it sounds. It was so inappropriate on your part. And you asked me a question about Cameron Payne. I don't even remember what it was.
I think I just said, what's up with Cam?
Yeah, it was something along the lines of, like, what do you think is up with Cameron Payne? So Cameron Payne is shooting after the Indiana game. It's now 16 games of Cameron Payne. I got his line called up. He's shooting under 32% from the field, 27.5% from three. The on-off numbers I don't have called up, but the on-off numbers for him are not great. But, I mean, that's incredibly noisy, obviously, because it's not only small sample size. But when he's on, usually Russell Westbrook's off. So yeah. The on-off numbers are probably irrelevant in that sense. But he hasn't looked good. He's really only had a couple of games. He was good in the Memphis game. He shot well in his first game. And it's not just the shooting. Like, the way that their second unit is being run is just kind of – it's discombobulated all over the place, and they're in an adjustment period without Kanter. What do you take away from the way that Payne is playing and the way that they're using him?
I'm really worried about him because I think that he's such a rhythm guy. I really, when I think about Cameron Payne being good, I think about last year whenever the Spurs and the Thunder played, and the Thunder really didn't play any of their good players. And Cameron Payne was really good that night. He helped keep the team afloat. He made a lot of baskets. And he gets in the lane and he can run a pick and roll and he's a pretty good passer, but we just haven't really seen that this season. I think we've seen it like in like really small spurts, but like not the way that we did last season. And so I'm worried. I don't know if this is a mental thing for him. I don't know if this is his foot. I don't know if like he's put on this weight and he's like, I don't really know how to get around the court like I did with all this weight on me. Like, I don't know what it is, but he doesn't look right. He doesn't look like the player he was last year when he was good. And it's concerning because I feel like a lot of the shots he's missing are these like muscle memory shots where he gets into the lane and these are shots that he has like made throughout his entire basketball career and he's not making them. And so that seems like a mental thing to me. I don't know if you agree with that.
You know what to me is a bigger deal than the missed shots? Because the missed shots, look, maybe I don't know what he's going to shoot in his career. I don't know what he's going to shoot this season. But he's not going to be a 32% shooter. I think you can agree with me on that. Like, he's not
I think it's more the shots in the lane that are bothering me more than, like, his outside shots.
Yeah, that's fine. But either way, like, the overall missed shots don't kill me. Because it's not like he's taking bad shots. And it's not like he's struggling to create these shots and all these shots are, you know, contested off the dribble shots because he can't create his own shot. Mm-hmm. To me, they're just not going in. And I think eventually there's going to be a period where they go in. The bigger issue to me is the struggles that he's had initiating the offense. They get into their offense so slow in the second unit. And there are so many times where the ball comes out to him, he takes the ball up. They don't initiate their first set until 12 seconds into the shot clock. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge problem. Like, you want – people talk about playing with pace. And when people talk about – like, there's a difference between when – and I know you know this, but there's a difference between, like, when basketball people talk about playing with pace and when, like, fans talk about playing with pace. When fans talk about playing with pace, they're probably talking about, like, getting out in the break and scoring on the fast break and running after shots and all that. When teams talk about playing with pace, what they're really talking about is getting into their sets early. You want to get – if you can get into a set with 19 seconds left on the shot clock, 18 seconds left on the shot clock every possession, you're probably going to be a decent offense because a lot of offenses just don't do that, and it gives you time to run a second set if your first one fails. And – they're not getting in the second unit, sometimes with like 10 seconds left on the shot clock, and it just doesn't give them time. So many plays just end up in isolations because they don't have a lot of movement or ways to free up guys anyway in that reserve unit. And I think I honestly think that's the biggest problem. If they were initiating their offense with 18 on the shot clock every time, their second unit offense would look so much better.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And maybe part of it is that their second unit has had so much change throughout the season. There's been no continuity. So, like, it took them a while to get into those, like, Enes Kanter, you're going to run the second unit offense. I mean, it took them several weeks to get that. And then once Kanter goes out, now they're like, okay. It just feels like they don't really know what to do. And I think that feels like what the first 10 seconds of the shot clock is just them like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Can you spell that for me? Yeah, just, I want to make sure.
U-G-H-H-H.
Oh, there are three H's. Okay.
Yes.
I don't know why I thought there were five.
It's probably because of the length that I said it. I don't know. It's very strange. And I mean, Cameron Payne, I mean, I projected him to be very good. And last season, there were a lot of reasons to think that he should be. But I mean, do you think that it's a mental thing? Like, what is, I know that he's not initiating the offense, but like, what do you think the reasons behind that is?
I think part of it is a mental thing. Like, you talk about rhythm. Like, it's hard to get into that rhythm. It's hard to get into that rhythm. When you are in the situation where he's in, where he's kind of still a rookie in some ways. Like, he didn't play his full rookie season. He got hurt, and he got benched a lot, and, like, he feels like a rookie, you know? He plays like a rookie in some ways, and it looks like he didn't quite have that development in year one that I think the Thunder would have liked coming into year two. And that's okay. Considering the circumstances he was under, that he had multiple foot injuries, that's okay. But I think it's a reason for why we're seeing what we're seeing. So, like, if you want to call that mental, like, I don't know if when you say mental, do you mean psychological or do you mean like strategically mental?
Yeah, I mean psychological.
Yeah, maybe it's possible. I don't know.
I mean, his foot was
hurt for
a long time.
I'm never good at guessing on that stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm never good at guessing on that stuff.
His foot was hurt for a long time, and I just wonder because, I mean, he played. I mean, he was walking in a walking boot a lot of last season, even when he was playing. And from what I heard, he had a Jones fracture for a long time, and it just wasn't that bad. And then eventually it was, and then he had to have surgery. So I wonder if there is something psychological about just using that foot. Just like the surgically repaired foot.
Maybe. That's definitely possible. I'll tell you, I have had knee injuries, like major knee injuries. I've torn my ACL and my MCL. And when I come back, like, same thing. You're like very cautious about it. And I'm not playing against NBA caliber players.
Yeah.
So I would think that would be an excusable way to think about it if you're, you know, 22 years old and coming off not just an injury, like he had the Jones fracture, which he went through last year, and then he had the surgery on it and over the summer, and then he, you know, fractured the same bone in the same foot in September, and like I would understand the paranoia. I would understand the cautiousness. Like, that mentality is something I completely, I mean, it would be a little weird if there was none of that, right?
Sure.
You'd be wondering, like, what's wrong with this guy? Why does he not understand what he just went through?
Yeah, and how long until Vic just runs a second unit?
You know, I talked about that on the podcast this morning, I think.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to go with – the lineup that I just said off the top of my head was like, I wonder if they're going to go in – you know, not every time, because Billy's not going to be consistent with second unit rotations with Canner out. He's just not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it depends situationally. But, like, I wonder if he just goes Vic at the one, and then you go Abrines and Moro, or you go Abrines and Roberson. You know, maybe you go Abrines and Grant, and you have like Sabonis and Laverne as your 4-5, or Adams has been playing with the second unit. You go Laverne, you know, Laverne Adams or Grant Adams or whatever it is, but you have, however it is, you have Oladipo as the point. The problem with that is that, like, if Oladipo gets, like, let's say another team traps Oladipo on a pick and roll in that scenario, mm-hmm. and he has to give up the ball, like, who is going to do what with the basketball? What, now you've got Anthony Morrow creating on the wing?
Yeah, that's a problem.
I guess your best case scenario with that lineup is Abrines. Like,
yeah. And but he's, like, I mean, he hasn't handled the ball all that much.
Right. If Adams is out there, he's obviously your secondary option. But mm-hmm. in a scenario where, like, let's say that scenario, Oladipo gets trapped on the pick and rolls, because that's how I defend it. Yeah. Let's say Oladipo gets trapped on the pick and rolls. Like, Adams is not an option there because he's rolling to the hoop and Oladipo may not be able to get him the ball. And Adams is not necessarily a guy who you're going to give it to anywhere. You know, you're not going to give it to him more than 6 feet from the basket and tell him to do something with it. So, like, what is your option there? Like, you maybe give it to Grant and you let him do the drive and flail, which he's made so famous? Or you give it to, you know, Roberson and or Moro or Abrines, whoever it is. Like, it's not – you don't have a creator. Like, Abrines is probably your second bet, is probably your best option in that scenario, right?
Yeah. I mean, the fact is that the Thunder just don't have great options off their bench right now. They don't have great creators. They're either, like, not a great NBA player, or they're just too young and inexperienced. So, I mean, they just got to try stuff until Canner comes back. And sometimes it's worked. Like, they had a really good game over the weekend, but sometimes it doesn't look as good. I mean, he's just going to have to keep trying stuff. I hope to see more Alex Abrines, because he looked really good. I mean, he was making his shots against Indiana, and then he, like, yanked him. I don't know. I'd like to see more of him.
Yeah, and I talked about that on yesterday's podcast. Like, I know Billy likes to go back and forth on his rotations, but I'm not quite sure why Abrines fell out. I know he thinks Morrow did an okay job and when he was hurt, but like, he came back and he was a healthy DNP, and mm-hmm. then he only played 7 minutes compared to 13 or 14 for Morrow in the Pacers game. And yeah. Like, look, Morrow, when he's hitting his shots, is historically a really good shooter. Obviously, he hasn't been hitting his threes this year, but at the same time, he's a rhythm guy, and he hasn't been put in a position to get consistent playing time, and he's in a tough role. So I really do think that's a valid excuse for why he's not making his shots. And I really do believe – it's not like he's like this old guy who lost a shot. He's 31. Like, I totally believe that if he got consistent playing time, he would be making more than 30% of his threes. But Abrines is like 46, 47% since the end of December from three.
Yeah.
And – he's 22 years old, and if you want to talk 23, you want to talk about player development and giving guy opportunities moving forward. Like, they use that argument for Sabonis and why I should start, and I totally believe it. I completely agree with that logic. It makes total sense to me, but I think it probably has got to apply to Abrines too, right?
I think so. And you look at the lineup data, like, a lot of the really great lineups include Alex Abrines. A lot of them include Cantor too, but I don't see, like, an argument that says that he shouldn't be playing. Like, the data says he should be playing, even though some of it's, like, super small sample, but it's still very good. And a guy like Jeremy Grant, whose lineup data looks really bad, he continues to get minutes. I don't know. And I know Grant's more versatile and can defend guys and he can play more positions. I understand that. But this team needs shooting so bad, and he's a guy that can provide that, and I think that he should be given more of a shot.
Maybe Billy just wants to show off that Moro headband.
It's good.
You know, I don't like him with the headband.
It doesn't look right, but I love it.
It looks off, right?
It does. Like did you hear a part of his reasoning was somebody tweeted at him that they can't tell him and Jeremy Grant apart?
Oh, it wasn't just that. Like, it was beyond that. Like, he noticed it. He said that, like, he joked that, like, they were in, like, film session. He was like, wait, when was I there? And I was like, oh, no, that's Jeremy Grant. And then he started wearing the headband.
It's just a tip to the fans, because it is hard to tell them apart.
Yeah, well, remember the Chris Webber thing?
No.
When Grant dunked on KD in the first Warriors game?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about something else.
Yeah, Chris Webber just uproarious about how Anthony Morrow dunked on him and wasn't Anthony Morrow.
Oh, Chris Webber kills
me. Do you hear
that
train in the background right now?
No.
Oklahoma City trains are so loud.
Oh, I can hear it now. Yes.
Oklahoma City trains are so loud. I always record with the window closed, but I cooked tonight, and the house is very smoky, and I had to leave like the screen door open, and now you get some natural train noise.
A nice little pod train.
Yeah, nice, some nice pod train. That's a terrible name. That's like incredibly uncreative.
That's what it is. It's not uncreative. It's just a fact.
How do you feel about the fact that Steven Adams will be playing 49 minutes at this point if Billy Donovan could do that?
Oh, man. I kind of love it, to be honest. I think these are kind of good developmental minutes for Adams and to play with guys that aren't Russell Westbrook because it feels like they've been kind of a tandem all season. And so to get him minutes where he's doing different stuff and can, you know, even pass out of the post a little bit himself, kind of in the canter mold, I like it. And they have the All-Star break coming up where they have like 9 or 10 days off. I like it. I hope that he plays a lot because I really like him. And I think that, you know, he really needs to play more in general, in my opinion. And what I thought they should do whenever Kanter went out was play Adams 35 minutes and then play Nick Collison, you know, 13 minutes a game. Because I just think that I like Joffrey a lot, and he's had some good games. But last night against Al Jefferson, I mean, Big Al just destroyed him. He made him pretty irrelevant. So I like it.
So Tim Duncan is retired. Kevin Garnett is retired. That means there's like an up-for-grabs title of best screen setter in the NBA.
This is true. Adams has got a great argument. Yeah.
I don't think he's quite the best. And the reason why is because I don't think he screens enough for him to be – like, I think DeAndre Jordan is the best screen setter.
Yeah, I mean, and he does it all the time. And there's a stat – basically, like, all the Clippers bigs always showed up really well in the Vantage data when it came to screens.
Well, that's because you got Chris Paul running the screen and rolls that are in the data, and you got JJ Redick running off the pin downs that are in the data.
Yep.
So it's like it's also a chicken and egg thing. It's like, well, Redick is really good at running off those screens in part because he's got arguably the best screen setter sending them for him. But, you know, it's a very nice symbiotic statistical relationship going on there.
And they set a ton of screens too. And speaks to what you were just saying is that one of the top guys in this screen stat 2 years ago was Big Baby.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He was top three. And so it's like a very Clippers thing to show up well in screen data, which is kind of funny.
So I wonder, Adams has an argument. He's in the conversation among the best screen setters. You see Evan Turner's quote?
I did.
That was a great quote.
Yes. Yeah, where he basically, they asked him about Russell Westbrook, and he decided to talk about Steven Adams instead.
Right. He just talked about Steven Adams as such a great screen setter, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I love that. Evan Turner's
great. He's great.
Yeah. Such an amazing, one, like top top five interview in the league.
He also always sounds like he has a bubble in his throat.
He does. He has kind of a high voice.
Yeah.
Great interview, though. He's smart and he's hilarious and he's like, just, he's a great personality. Fantastic. Anyway, I would love to see the second unit, and I feel like you're going to agree with me on this. Adams is out there, and we talk about how the second unit is so stagnant. We talk about how Cameron Payne looked really good when he ran proper pick and rolls last year.
Mm-hmm.
These are all things that Steven Adams can help with. Like Steven Adams setting a down screen to free up Oladipo because they're not getting into their offense, just so you can get Oladipo the ball with a few feet of space, or for Payne, a few feet of space with the ball. Like that helps. Then they can actually make a move. They can go to the basket. They can penetrate. They could try to create some kind of shot. You can then have somebody else come over and you can start a pick and roll. Like, these are the simplest types of NBA offense, right? This is so simple. Or, you know, just talk about, you talk about how Payne looks so comfortable running pick and rolls. Just come up and set a high ball screen, you know? Like, that's literally the easiest type of NBA offense you can run. I mean, that's the roll the ball out and do nothing offense. And those kind of things, they're not quite doing them with Adams in the second unit. And it's not as much a criticism as it is an observation at this point, because it's only been a couple of games with Adams really getting major minutes with the second unit.
Right.
And they're still obviously trying to figure stuff out. And I'm sure this is incredibly simple stuff. I'm sure Billy Donovan has very much thought of this. And if they're going to try to implement this stuff, it might take more than two or three games. So it's not at a point of criticism yet. But I do think that's something they have to at least try to implement if they're going to play Adams those major minutes with the second unit.
I totally agree. It's almost like, yeah, it's almost too simple of an answer, because like Joffrey has like proven to be a at least competent outside shooter. And then you either have Morrow or Abrines in there. Like, you have plenty of spacing, like theoretical spacing, to run that pick and roll. It almost just makes too much sense. And there's something that I'm completely missing because I don't know why they're not doing it.
And if Payne is running it, like, guys still guard Oladipo. He's slumping, but like guys still guard him on the perimeter. Like, they're not going to guard him on the perimeter when it's Westbrook out there, but they'll guard him when it's Payne.
Yeah.
No one's, you know, they're not guarding Payne the same way they're guarding Russell Westbrook as a team. So like, yeah, I mean, you've got some spacing in the second unit. If you've got a lineup of, you know, of Abrines and Payne and Oladipo and maybe LaVern and Adams, or LaVern and Grant, even, like, those those lineups have spacing. You can do that.
Yeah, they've got to start giving Cam some gimmies. Like, if they want to develop him, they've got to give him some gimmies. And a way to do that, I feel like, is pick and roll. And he's competent at that. But I feel like they want him to create something out of nothing a lot of times, and it's not working at all.
I think part of it, and I think part of this is one of the reasons, Jeremy Grant doesn't really do anything if he doesn't have the ball. And I think that's part of it. And he's playing a lot of minutes with Jeremy Grant. And he doesn't really do anything if he doesn't have the ball. I think he's good at the faux activity in a lot of ways. Defensively, he's very active. And it's not an issue of not playing hard. Like, I've talked about this before. Like, it's not an issue of not playing hard. Like, it's not like he doesn't try and that's the issue. It's just that, like, he tends to be kind of stagnant when he doesn't have the ball. Like, how many screens has he set? We talk about screening. How many screens has Jeremy Grant set this year?
Oh, man, it's got to be, like, maybe 100. Like, maybe.
How many pick and rolls have they run with Jeremy Grant? You think that Jeremy Grant could be a pick and roll guy, right? Like, he could be a roll man. He's got big shoulders, and he's 6'8", 6'9". He could lay a screen. The threat of the lob would be horrifying. Like, you don't think he's going to be – you know, we talk about DeAndre Jordan. You don't think he's going to be DeAndre Jordan or anything. But, like, why can't he be like Amir Johnson in the pick and roll?
It's almost too simple. I feel like I ask myself these questions, and I don't understand. Like, I don't understand why there's not – and you talked about this, and I've never really understood this about the Thunder, why they don't set more screens in general. Like they talk about the stagnant offense. Why don't you set some off-ball screens and get people open? If you have guys that can't shoot, make them active. Make them set screens, not just on-ball screens for Russ, but let's get some motion going. And Billy seems to talk about that kind of stuff, where he talks about player movement and ball movement, and you'd think that those things would help, but maybe I'm missing something. I don't really get it.
Isn't this week weird?
It's been weird.
Well, like, I'll clarify exactly what I mean. because that was very vague. Isn't this week weird? You have to go build Legos with your kids.
Build a Lego raccoon? It's so weird.
Isn't it a total afterthought that, like, LeBron James is coming to town in 48 hours?
It is. And this, it's a, there's a massive cloud hanging over Oklahoma City right now. And it's the, it's Kevin Durant coming. And I thought that the fan base and people would be, like, pumped for this moment. But it seems more of like a moment of dread than anything else.
It does seem a little inevitable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like the outcome, what's going to happen.
It does. Although, I wonder how Kevin Durant is going to react in the moment to, because when, I mean, he's never really ever
to all the cheers he's going to get to the massive video tribute.
That's right. he just made the decision, and you know, we gotta respect him and really love what he did for those 8 years and cheer him on, right?
Amazing. Even like DJ Augustine gets cheers here.
Yeah,
and like, yeah, he's has there ever been a guy who like has left and they have really booed?
Yeah, James Harden was booed really, really hard when he came
back.
I
remember Harden was booed, but it was like really, really hard when he got.
Yeah, I was there and I was booing. Yes.
But that's tamed.
Every time he touched the ball, he was booed the whole game.
That's tamed, though.
And Hashim Thabeet became like the fan favorite that night because he got thrown out of the game for like pushing James Harden.
Hashim Thabeet. And third overall pick, Hashim Thabeet. Some weird picks in the 2009 draft.
He was number two, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was number two. Harden was three.
Harden was three, yeah.
He was number two. Some weird picks in the 09 draft. They're, like, unbelievable players. You got Harden, you got Curry, and then you've got, like, in the top, and then you got, like, second was the beat. And you got Blake Griffin was one, right?
Yes.
Blake Griffin was one. Then you got second the beat. Sixth was Johnny Flynn.
Tyreek Evans was in there. Rookie of the year, Tyreek Evans.
Yeah. Future star, Tyreek Evans.
That's right.
Yeah.
Feature of the Sacramento Kings.
Averaged 25-5 as a rookie.
He was amazing that year. He really was.
Mm-hmm. He was great. He was going to be awesome. They were playing him a point guard. And now he's... You know what's an underratedly terrible deal of the last 5 years? The Pelicans giving away Robin Lopez and Gravis Vasquez for free so that they could sign Tyreek Evans to a $10 million a year deal.
That's really bad. And then
when like $10 million a year was a lot.
And then the Omer Asik deal happened because of that as well.
Yes. They gave away Robin Lopez for free. They just gave him to Portland.
That Portland team was good, too.
Because Neil Olshey somehow just gets guys for free. He's so good when, like, a team is, like, trying to dump somebody's contract because they, like, want to make a signing that's, like, ill-advised and the guy they're dumping is decent. He's somehow Neil Olshey always ends up, like, sticking his head in the door and is like, hey, what's going on? I'll take him. Did the same thing with Mo Harkless.
I was about to say that. Mm-hmm. And how many teams would want Mo Harkless right now? Like all the teams would want him.
And they got him to a good contract too.
Yep, that's insane.
Yeah, he's on like a really reasonable. Was he 4 for 40 or something like that?
Yes. Yeah.
Very reasonable. He's a good player. Like he started for them a decent amount, and that's like less than starter money.
Yeah, he's
that's less
he's
than
very
Solomon
good.
Hill money.
It's insane. They paid a lot of people, though. They've got lots of people that they paid.
They
the Blazers.
I think they're an underrated organization. I think they're a really, really good organization. And I think Olshey is really – he's fantastic at his job. And I think they have a ton of smart people in their front office. But there are a lot of moves they made this offseason where I was like, why are they doing that? This is so un-Blazers-like.
They just wanted Evan Turner to come in for all the interviews. That was it.
Yeah. They have a great interview team, I'll tell you that much. Because Evan Turner's awesome, and McCollum's awesome.
Ah, McCollum's good.
And Lillard, honestly, Lillard, everything I hear, I've never met Damian Lillard, but everybody who covers him, everyone just says that he's such a good guy. And he seems like it. He totally gives off that impression.
Yeah, he seems awesome.
They have a lot of – Mason Plumlee I know a little bit from covering the Nets, and he's actually really good. They have Mason Plumlee is going to get paid too. They have some good Mason Plumlee, the most underrated passing big man in the NBA.
Yeah, he was always toward the top in any sort of like advanced stat, passing stats. He was always very good.
Great
he always
passer.
Ranked. He always ranked really high. My friend and I, Alex Spears, did these podcasts for Vantage Sports last year where we would rank, we'd go and rank like every position, and we'd do like the top 25 players. And Mason Plumlee would always pop up like in the top like 20 of centers. We'd be like, Mason Plumlee, what are you doing here? But yeah, he does a lot of really good things on the court. He's not, if he was a better defender, it would make a world of difference. But he does a lot of positive things on the court.
How do you feel about Jeremy Grant not being in the dunk contest?
I feel sad. I really think that he
I like the Thunder
great.
Fans in my mentions being like, he was snubbed. I don't think he was snubbed.
He was definitely not snubbed.
He's definitely not. Look, I've said I think he would have been great in the dunk contest. He's an he's an incredible dunker. And he's got a lot more personality than he lets on in interviews. He's one of those guys, you put a mic in his face and he becomes, you know, kind of, he just, you know, reels off the cliches and lets it go. And then when you're just chatting with him, he's this like really funny, incredibly personable, smart, charismatic guy. So I think he's got the personality where he'd be good in the dunk contest too. And he will never say it, but he really wants to do it.
He's a freak athlete, and I'd love to see him in the dunk contest.
He loves dunking so much. Has he ever, one time in his career, gone at the rim with the intention of, I'm just going to lay this one in?
Only when he does the weird quasi dribble drive fall over thing. That's about the only thing.
But he's trying to dunk that until he just can't physically do it. Like,
that's true.
All Jeremy Grant made layups are just missed dunks that happen to go into the basket.
That's right. The only other player that would say that about in Thunder history is Chris Wilcox. Chris Wilcox would try to dunk it from wherever he caught the ball.
Yeah. Chris Wilcox. Lottery pick Chris Wilcox.
That's right. He was not very good.
He was going to team up with Chris Kaman to save the Clippers.
That's right.
He was their 2002 pick, and Kaman was their 2003, I think. And they were going to be the front court that saved the Clippers. Spoiler alert, they didn't.
He was fun. He was fun for a while.
It was so Clippers that Kaman was a good pick at six overall. Like,
yeah,
he had a good career, and he was actually really good for the Clippers. Made an all-star team, but it was always, I always thought, because I grew up a Clippers fan, I always thought it was very Clippers that in like the 2003 draft, like top five included LeBron and Melo and Wade and Bosh, and then you get to six, and they were like, let's take Kaman
and Chris Kaman.
One pick earlier, and they've got Bosh or whomever else, or Wade, or
let's get the guy in camo.
They're like, let's go with Kaman. Although I guess it would have been even more Clippers for them to get Darko.
Oh man, do you think did some people think that Darko could have been good if he was in a better situation? Not that the Clippers is a better situation, but a lot of people think that Larry Brown just destroyed his NBA career.
I mean, I'm a big believer that I think that's probably true for the vast majority of prospects.
Yeah.
I think that's true for a ton of prospects.
I mean, you just look at teams in the league that are like considered like bad organizations. Like the Kings have Boogie, and like all their other young guys just aren't good. And is it because they don't have talent, or is it because they're the Kings? Like, I don't know.
Well, that's why one of the things that I always say about the Thunder is people talk about how, like, that drafting run that Presti had, which was obviously amazing with Durant and then Westbrook and Ibaka and then Harden. And, you know, it's obviously one of the best drafting runs of any GM ever. There's no question about that. But what that kind of undermines is just the player development it took. Look, Kevin Durant was probably going to be a great player no matter where he was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's necessarily true for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, like, I mean, you can make that argument.
It's not easy to say now that Russell Westbrook is going to be great no matter what because he's, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer and unbelievable and an MVP candidate and all that stuff. But, like, when he first came in, there were a lot of people and there were organizations who were like, he's a shooting guard.
Right.
Or he can't play point guard. Mm-hmm. Or we're just going to turn him into a defensive-minded off-ball guy. Can you imagine that?
Like, that would be, I mean, and most people would have agreed with that. Most people would have agreed with that.
The development there helped, and it's not just you know, it's not just those guys. It's Andre Robertson's development, and Ibaka's development was obviously tremendous. He was just an athlete. He tried to block every single shot when he first came up. Yep. Then he really became a real defensive player. So the internal player development, I think, tends to get lost in this stuff. I think we think a player gets drafted, and then he's going to become what he's going to become. But the internal player development makes sense. On this note, I'm going to ask you a question before we conclude.
Okay.
Do you think Josh Huestis, my arch nemesis, Josh Huestis, do you think he should get minutes?
I think he should, but there's got to be a reason he doesn't that we're not seeing. But I don't know how he could be worse than Kyle Singler. I don't know how that's possible. So I think that they should give him a shot. And I've heard that he isn't great on the pick and roll coverage, but it's not like Singler's out there blowing up pick and rolls all over the place. So
you know what is the incredibly weird thing about this whole thing to me?
Hmm.
Whenever you ask Billy, what's the reason why he doesn't get minutes? That's what Billy says. It's because he's still learning. He was a foreign college and you know, he's okay on the back end of pick and rolls. And he's still learning how to defend the front ends of pick and rolls. And obviously he's saying, you know, he's not good enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's been 3 years now.
Yeah.
It's on the second year of his contract, but it's been 3 years. Like, throw him into the fire or don't. And maybe they won't. Maybe that's just what it is. Maybe they won't throw him into the fire. Maybe they don't think he's good enough. But here's the reason why I think that specific reason is weird. First of all, you could play him when there's a three who doesn't run pick and rolls. Yeah. Like, you could just put him in situationally in a moment where there's like an Andre Robertson type out there, and you could just have him guard that guy. Like, he's not going to run a pick and roll. That's not going to happen. And that eliminates the issue right there. Secondly, you watch any Blue games?
I've watched maybe three Blue games in 2 years.
Okay. Have you watched any this year?
Yeah, I watched the ones where Cam was playing.
Okay. Do you remember who started at the four in that game?
Josh Huestis.
Why are they starting him at the four if his big issue is learning how to play the three?
I don't know. And it's not like every Thunder player is really good at defending the pick and roll. The Thunder have lots of players that play that are not good at defending the pick and roll.
That's why I think it's a little bit more Billy being a politician, and that's his reason. And I think there's got to be something else there that, like you kind of just said, they're not saying. Whether it's they just don't think he's good enough or whatever it is. And I honestly don't have an opinion because I'm not watching a lot of the Blue. I don't really have enough of an opinion. I've seen Josh play a little bit. He's a good athlete. I understand. Like, it's not like Kyle Singler is tearing it up. Like, you got a first-round pick who they haven't given a chance to. I would get it if they want him to go out there and just say, just go guard somebody for, you know, just the Singler minutes, which aren't nightly. Just, you know, the 10 minutes every other game that Singler gets or whatever it is, you know? I don't think it would kill them if they tried that once just to see how Huestis did. And I don't know. It's interesting. I don't fully understand why he's playing the four. I think that's a piece that I'm going to do at some point. It will be very niche. It will be read by like 26 people.
I'll be one.
But like, it's an interesting thing, right? Like, there's an organization saying this is our first round pick's big flaw. He needs to work that out before he can come up into the NBA and then play that position. And then they're playing, not putting him in a position to work that out down low. So I want to know is like why that is, because this organization is too tight. Everything is just like too tautly wound for that to just be like an oversight, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very simple thing. You want a guy to improve playing the three, playing him at the three. Like that's a very simple thing. So I wonder why that is. I don't know the answer, but it's something I would like to try to find out.
Yeah. And I'd be interested to know. I'd just be interested to know generally, like, what's their opinion of him. And to me, I feel like the Jeremy Grant trade was just a, oh my gosh, Josh Huestis will never be an NBA player trade. Because, I mean, they're basically, they serve the same purpose, right? Like, they're both like three, right, fours.
Stylistically, that
block shots, shoot threes. And obviously they don't trust Huestis to do it. And I don't know, Josh, he's looked good in minutes that he's gotten. Like, he looked pretty good in the preseason. He looked good last season. He played against Detroit, and he played really well. He looked good in his garbage time minutes this season where he's played one game. I don't know. Give him a try. I don't see why not.
Yeah, just get him off my back on Twitter.
That's right. No, I actually love that.
I bet you do. I do. I bet you do. All right, anything to plug before we go?
Just listen to Down to Dunk. Download it on iTunes. We have the trade deadline coming up, so we do lots and lots of fake trades. So if you're into fake trades, listen to us on Friday. We'll have a ton of them. We have a lot of fun doing that kind of stuff. So come check us out. And, yeah, that's about it.
Some of the fake trades that you guys propose are hilarious.
Some of them are supposed to be hilarious.
And I know.
Some people may not get that.
I know that. You say a trade, but every once in a while you propose one that like is definitely supposed to be hilarious, but you address it very seriously, and you're like, no, they're like, well, yeah. The trade is, you know, Singler and Morrow for DeMarcus Cousins. And then you're like, yeah, you know, I think if I'm the Kings, I probably wouldn't. I would probably want a little bit more if I were the Kings. I think they could probably get. I know Boogie's got the attitude issue, but I think he'd get a little bit more than that. And everyone's like, yeah, Andrew, that's a good point.
I love fake trades.
Fake trades are fun.
They are super fun.
Fake trades are always fun. The trade machine is always a fun thing. How ESPN like stole the trade machine from Real GM is an oral history in the making right there.
Tell me this. Why doesn't Real GM or ESPN make a trade machine app, make it $5, and they'll make a ton of money on that? Like, what NBA fan doesn't want the trade machine right as an app? I don't get it.
Why don't you do that?
Because I don't know how. I need to find
it. It's a great idea. I don't know. That's a great idea.
You want it. I know you do. I do too.
I would download that. It'd be a great app.
It would be a great $5 for it.
It would be a great way to like kill 5 minutes when I'm bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. Do it. Make it happen.
Get on that, ESPN.
No, you make it happen. Approach ESPN. You got the connections with Royce.
That's true. Hey, Royce, can you help me with something?
Yeah. Royce, I want to make an app.
Can you help me make this app?
Get that done. All right. So anything else? Anything else you need to other than fake trades and the podcast?
You can follow us on Twitter at DCD Podcast, or you can follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht, Schlecht. That's all the consonants in the entire alphabet.
How many times have you used that joke?
I use it all the time.
Great. That's exactly what I was hoping.
That's right.
And you can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. This week is a little bit adjusted. I'm actually not going to do the podcast Thursday after the Cleveland game. That's because I'm going to do a special episode for Saturday morning because Saturday is a pretty decent day, I guess. And we're going to be a decent day. That's a terrible plug. It's a pretty decent day. Yeah, Saturday's a big day, and Kevin Durant's coming to Oklahoma City. All right, is that work, Andrew?
That'll do.
That's fine. That's the worst plug ever. I'd be like the worst guy in the movie trailers. Come see this movie. It's a pretty decent movie.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. You won't want to kill yourself in this movie. But yeah, so I'm gonna record a podcast on Friday. I'll post it. I may just post it like Friday afternoon, so that way you get even more time to listen on it. But it'll 100% be up for Saturday morning. Maybe even before that, but I'm recording that on Friday. Have at least one really good guest coming on. May just make it a couple thing because we're going to be talking just Durant the entire time and Durant's return and everything like that. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com or find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That'll do it for today. Thank you to Andrew for coming on. Back with you tomorrow leading into the Cleveland game Thursday night. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.